And of course, your phone calls this hour with our guest, Lloyd Pye. I've always wondered who built those pyramids. And yes, I've thought that there could have been some extraterrestrial intervention there, but also a tremendously advanced civilization that might have lived on this planet, perhaps, as Michael Cremo says, millions and millions of years ago. Let's get Lloyd's take on that. And also, let's go down to Coral Castle in Homestead, Florida, and find out how he thinks Ed Leedskalnin perhaps built that structure. We'll be back in a moment. Your calls, Lloyd Pye on Coast to Coast AM. Couple twofold questions here, Lloyd Pye. First of all, is it possible that we could have, as Michael Cremo says, civilizations that were very advanced, that were here millions of years ago, might they have built the pyramids sometime?
Well, Michael is a good friend, and he and I just fundamentally disagree about one point. Those beings could easily have been here. I don't question that a lot of his zooparts, the out-of-place artifacts that he has dug up are real and valid. But the beings who would have been here, George, are not us. They're not human beings like us. They may have been the beings that created us, but it's pretty clear from our DNA that we, as we are today, don't exist prior to about 200,000 years ago. So whoever was here in the millions of years ago range, assuming they were, they're not us. They're something very much like us. They may have been the seed stock that created us, but it's not us.
They might have used humans whom they genetically altered to do some of the work.
Well, but it wouldn't have been millions of years ago. We don't exist as a species prior to 200,000 years ago. So whatever was doing it back then, they were doing it on their own accord, or they were doing it with somebody else. I would assume they were just doing it on their own accord, whatever they were doing. But as far as 200,000 years, that's a long time, but it isn't millions of years ago. So it's pretty clear that whatever was here, and I'm not saying that there weren't highly advanced civilizations, they just weren't us. We don't appear before about 200,000 years ago. But I also believe, like Graham Hancock says, I believe that there was a super civilization or any of the ones, Civilization One. There's so much evidence out there of advanced civilizations within fairly recent times, within, say, the last 30, 40,000 years. There was plenty of potential for very advanced civilizations here on the Earth that have just been, you know, lost to whatever disasters might have befallen them in the way that we may be facing a disaster in 2012. You just don't know. But you have to look at the evidence that's there, and the evidence is pretty clear, in my opinion.
Well, and when you talk about lost technology, think about Edward Leedskalnin from the Coral Castle in Florida.
I couldn't believe when you said that. You know, I've just this past week read a movie script about him and his life and building the cast. There's a fellow here in Florida named Joe Bullard. Again, this is another guy that contacted me.
I know Joe. Yeah, He's been on the show.
Oh, there you go. Well, he wrote a book about it, and I certainly think that Leedskalnin obviously tapped into something, some lost knowledge of the past he got, because there's just no way. You're talking about a 100-pound guy moving multi-ton stones by himself in the middle of the night. You know, obviously this guy knew something that none of the rest of us know, and for whatever reason, he never let that information out into the general public. But, you know, Tesla was a lot like him, too. Tesla was like from somewhere else almost, you know.
To the phones we go now. It's your turn with Lloyd Pye, east of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Jason from St. Joe, Missouri. Hey, George, you had a guest on quite a few months ago that believed that humans had only been around for about 6,000 years. And for your guest, I was just wondering what his opinion was on that, and I'll listen off the air.
Yes, and as you know, Lloyd, there are a number of people that subscribe, I don't, to that 6,000-year theory.
Sure.
Your take.
And that's something we should talk about. It's the creationist viewpoint that the Earth and everything was created about 10,000 years ago, and that humans are no more than 6,000 years old, according to the Bishop Usher chronicling of the who begat who in the Bible. And for those who might be interested in the ongoing and the reignited debate between intelligent design and evolution, for a very long time, creationists, those called the young earth creationists, by hinging their arguments to the Bible and insisting that everybody had to believe that the Bible was the literal truth, they were very easy for evolutionists to dismiss because those are absurd positions. I mean, I don't mean to slight anyone's religious beliefs, but those aspects of it are just absurd from a scientific standpoint. It's clear that that's just not the way it is. That's just not reality. The Bible, in that sense, is just flat wrong. I mean, it's just no doubt about it. So, as long as they were sticking to that position, they were easy to dismiss. But the intelligent designers are truly intelligent people. These are for the most part PhDs, and they recognize that the only way to move ahead against the evolutionists, against the Darwinists, was to uncouple from the Bible and uncouple from that strict interpretation of the 10,000, 6,000 years. And when they did that and they started playing the game strictly on the evolutionist playing field, using scientific arguments, suddenly everybody began to see, geez, these guys are making some points. It was known all along, from almost the beginning, that Darwinism, evolution, had gaping holes in it that just weren't going to be filled. And so the way it stands now, the intelligent designers have got momentum on their side because people are anybody that listens to their arguments knows, as I know and anybody else would, they're making very good sense at a scientific level. They are showing the truth of the matter, which is that evolution really doesn't work, but they're showing it in scientific terms, and they're not insisting that you believe the biblical interpretation of it. They're leaving that as an option for you if you want to go that way, but you don't have to. I think that in the end, that's going to be wrong too. It's going to be intervention. It isn't going to be necessarily the anthropomorphic God of anybody's religion, not just the Christian religion or Catholic or whatever. It's going to be gods with a small g, flesh and blood beings that were here and who genetically engineered us. That much we'll understand.
Okay, let's go to... Oh, go ahead, Lloyd.
Can
go
I
ahead.
Say one more thing? Because this, I think, absolutely, is really important. I have on my website a little small 1,700-word essay by a biologist from South Africa. His name is Antoni V. Maluski, and he wrote this, I think, a brilliant little essay called Evolution Versus Intelligent Design, Are the Gods Crazy? And he has a summation paragraph. Let me just read this and let everybody, you can go read his thing on my website if you want, but just listen to the arguments that he makes here. It is not rocket science to realize that a good theory cannot contradict itself, but evolution does so all the time and apparently shamelessly. Mutation is random except when it isn't. For example, adaptive mutation of the immune system. Mutation is confined to single bases except when it isn't. For example, polyploidy pulls a whole spare genome out of the hat. Natural selection works, except when it doesn't. For example, the relictual human appendix is as big as an eye and a lot more dangerous. Mendel rules genetics, except when he doesn't. For example, double recessive genes are mysteriously corrected in Arabidopsis. The genes express copying errors according to an inevitable molecular clock, except when they don't. For example, living fossils such as the coelacanth. DNA is the very scripture of life and the most elegant of material substitutes for gods, except when it isn't. For example, 90% of all human DNA is functionless junk. Genes are the servants of adaptation, except when they are selfish. For example, try to make head or tail of Richard Dawkins' idea of cause and effect. And last, as natural selection relentlessly promotes reproductive success, except when it doesn't. For example, humans, not bunnies, rule the world. And he goes over these points. When you hear it laid out like that, and many other ways, you see evolution is sunk. It's on its way down. They don't want to accept it, and you'll hear all kind of arguments. But it is, and something is going to take its place, and that's where I think intervention eventually will be it. And that was my five predictions earlier, playing right into that.
Well said. Let's go to the phones again. First-time caller line, you're on Coast to Coast. Welcome to the show. Hi there.
How you doing? Joe Bob from Omaha, Nebraska.
Yeah, hello, Joe Bob. How are you?
I'm doing good. Love your show. It's a fabulous one tonight.
Thank you.
I was wondering about the pyramids and the people who built them. You think were extraterrestrial or God-formed people. What about the pharaohs and the guys that are buried in them? Were they godlike? And what happened to them? Where'd they disappear to? Why'd we lose the technology?
Well, Joe Bob, first of all, there's never been a body found in a pyramid. There's never been a body found in a pyramid. They were not tombs. They are just called tombs, but they weren't tombs. They were something else. They were monuments of some kind to do something with some function, but not tombs. Now, as far as the pharaohs seem to have come on the scene very long after the pyramids were there, and they, you know, the pharaohs, if you go look at Egyptian history, they claimed everything they could claim, but they didn't really claim the pyramids for themselves. Egyptologists have assigned pyramids, a pyramid to Khufu, and then they assigned them to other pharaohs within a 100-year period just so they had some answers. See, what science does when it comes up against something like this for which they don't have an answer, there's no obvious answer. Their job is to have answers. That's what their job in life is. You're an expert. You have to have answers. They just make stuff up. And once they make it up, it becomes like a gospel that they have to defend at all costs. So this the original thing they made up was that Khufu did the Great Pyramid, and his son and grandson did another one, did the other two, rather. And then that all happened within a 100-year period without them really realizing that in doing that, they were boxing themselves into the absurd position of having 6 million stones put down in 100 years. And that, again, is one stone every 8 minutes, 24 hours a day, round the clock, which is absolutely impossible for those 100 years to get it all done. So, and yet they still defend it because that was the original thing that they came up with in the 1800s, and they're stuck with it, and they defend it to this day, even though it's clearly absurd and obvious that it couldn't have been the way they say it was.
Let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to Coast to Coast. It's your turn. Hi there. Hello. Well, let's see where he is. Go ahead.
Yes, I got a question for Lloyd Pye. By the way, okay. That's for you, George.
There you go. Okay, thanks.
I've always had a thought ever since I was young that I always got a little bit nervous on the longest day of the year and on the shortest day of the year, because the reason why we have the seasons is because the earth wobbles. And I've always had the thought, well, what if it wobbled down or up in the longest day of the year or the shortest day of the year, and it just didn't come back, and it just kind of fell over? I'd like to have Lloyd Pye's opinion on that. It's just a thought I had, maybe kind of crazy, but.
Well,
my answer off the air.
I'm not sure that, you know, I'd want to call anybody crazy, but I don't really think that that's something that you need to lose sleep over. The Earth just tipping completely over that way. Now, magnetism, it's clear that the poles change, the magnetic poles do change. I don't think that's a function of physical flipping of the Earth itself. I think that is, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier about the electric universe, that the electromagnetic forces, if you look at a picture of Earth looking at the magnetic lines around it swirling up and down out of the poles, that's where the lines of force are strongest, at the poles. And so just like with an electromagnet, those can flip depending on the outside forces. And it's clear that that's happened many times in the past on the Earth, and it could happen again. I don't think that means physical disaster with the globe spinning, because if it did, then I really think we'd all be in a world of hurt. I don't think that happens. It could be wrong, because you have those frozen mammoths with the buttercups in their mouths, and that's hard to explain. I'm not saying that it's absolutely impossible, but it doesn't to me seem possible based on what I know.
Okay, let's go to our West of the Rockies line. Your turn, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi.
Mr. Pye?
Yes.
You and I had correspondence many years ago. I listened to George's programs every night. And when I hear you discussing, people discussing where human beings came from, I never hear a distinction on the different races of the human beings, you know? Would it be possible, Mr. Nye, that for each race there was an Adam and an Eve brought to Earth from the planet on which they were given birth, and now we have destroyed our natural heritage, and now, of course, all the different races mixed together, and we have what we got now, as well as every animal, as well as every plant, as well as any mammal in the ocean, came here, were seeded here. The earth was seeded here. Since I called in about a year ago from giving a message from the Federation of the Universe, I have heard George repeatedly, when this comes up for discussion, use the expression, don't you think the earth was seeded? Yes, the earth was seeded. For each race, there was an Adam and an Eve.
I like this theory, Lloyd. What do you think?
Well, it certainly is possible because there are, you know, because of the distinction of the races. However, what works against that argument is this. Genetically, human beings are incredibly, incredibly similar. So similar that we're really not far from clones. Now, if you look at the cheetah, they're much closer to clones than we are. But the way science explains it is that we went through some kind of inexplicable bottleneck in the past such that all of humanity somehow was weeded down to just a few dozen breeding pairs from which we all spring within the last 200,000 years. This is how they explain the suddenness of our appearance. The problem with it is we are all still so much alike genetically that there is more variation. You take a standard troop of chimps or a standard group of gorillas out in the wild, within those 20 or 30 members, there is more genetic variation with any two of them within a group that has a lot of inbreeding in it. There's more genetic variation within any two of them than there is between any two humans. So anywhere. So we're very, very similar genetically. So it argues against that the races were brought from somewhere else. I'm prepared to believe pretty much the argument as it stands that once we split up from the seed group that we were developed from, if you go by the Sumerians, there were seven breeding couples, 14 beings that started us, that they created, and then from them spun off all of us. And then in isolated breeding populations, our races developed. To me, that's the most likely thing based on what I know about the genetics of us as we are now. But I will admit that there are some very distinctive differences in the races, and the idea of isolated breeding populations for me means that they had to have been isolated for quite some time to get as distinctive as they are.
Okay, stay with us. We'll be back with final phone calls with our very special guest, Mr. Lloyd Pye. Very fascinating book, by the way, out there called Everything You Know Is Wrong. Couple websites, LloydPye.com, StarChildProject.com, both linked up at CoastToCoastAM.com. On our next Coast to Coast program, guest will be Peter Gersten, former UFO attorney for Citizens Against UFO Secrecy. Get ready for that one on Coast to Coast AM. Lloyd, someone somewhere created the creator. Somewhere. But where? Hello, Lloyd. Are you
yes.
there?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
There you go. I lost you there. Somebody
I thought
created
you were just pontificating there.
I am, but I want you to give me a reaction to my pontification.
Well, you know, that comes down really to first cause. That's kind of, I think, the term now that's coming into favor to discuss, you know, what kicked it all off. And there, in the future, when we were talking earlier, and I said that evolution's going to fall, I mean, there's no doubt about it. It's got to go down, and something has to take its place. What I think it's going to break into a two-part puzzle at that point. We will have to deal with ourselves. It'll be clear that we were genetically engineered, and so were the domesticated plants and animals, and we'll have to come to terms with the existence of superior beings at some point in the past, and probably out there now. But then when it comes to first cause, who created them and who created those that created them and how far does it go? We have to get, that's why I think the electric universe discussion was important. We have to get past the idea that the universe is finite. I don't think that it is. And when we get to the understanding or the acceptance of the electric universe and its infinite capacities there, it opens us up to the idea that there is so much more going on than we can imagine right now. And the first cause out there beyond that is going to be unknowable to us. We'll know that it's out there. We'll know something's out there. But we're not going to know what it is until and unless, I think, something comes to tell us, something that knows the answer tells us. I don't think we're going to be able to get to it on our own steam, carrying the brains in our heads that we have now, the very limited capacities that we have. To us, we seem very, very smart, obviously, but to those out there who created us and who are, you know, who stand in layers behind them, perhaps, we're, you know, idiots, basically, compared to them, because they have full use of their brains, which we might get, like I said, somewhere a couple hundred years down the line, and then maybe we can figure it out. I think there is an answer, but for the time being, in the immediate future, if we get past 2012, I think it's going to break into a two-part puzzle, trying to figure out the mechanics of how we got to be here physiologically, how the genetics, how we were genetically engineered, and then there will be the higher where religion and other things will continue to exist, trying to figure out the reality of the first cause.
Are you a believer in life after death?
I really think there might be more. Really, based again on my research, I'm thinking that there is so much more that we don't understand. And the evidence, you know, Michael Cremo's evidence and other evidence for that is so good, for the paranormal is so good and so strong. Even though I spent a lot of my younger years being fairly agnostic about it and thinking, nah, that's not really possible. I'm coming to change as I get older, and I don't think because I'm getting older, I just learn more, and as I learn more, it seems to indicate to me that the possibility of life after, if not life, something, some spiritual quality of existence, I think might well be possible.
Okay, back to the phones we go, east of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast to Coast. You're on the air with Lloyd Pye. Hi there.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, sir.
Yeah, my name is Nathan. I'm calling from North Carolina. And I'd just like to sort of point out that, like, so many, and this was just reinforced a second ago, so many of these theories seem based on this sort of defeatist notion that humans, especially ancient humans, just, like, couldn't, like, the theories are true because so-and-so could not have done that or could not have known that, and specifically with, you know, the ancient people. And sort of an example is the thing with the Atlas statue. It's pretty standard at this point that, you know, there was tremendous knowledge of astronomy in the ancient world. And the Greeks especially elevated, they had telescopes, like very powerful telescopes. And it's actually been recently sort of, like, the thinking at this point is that the actual carvings on the Atlas statue represent a lost star map from the Greek era. It's just this weird exoteric notion that so many of these theories have, is that, you know, that there's some sort of outside force that either has to, you know, help the poor humans or hurt the poor humans, whereas the humans have done so many, you know, incredible things that most people wouldn't guess that ancient people had telescopes and, you know, and had tremendous knowledge of that thing. You know, I mean, the whole flat earth theory didn't come around. That's like sort of like a Middle Ages, you know, view when sort of literal word-for-word belief in the Bible was necessary for survival in, you know, European society. It's not how it always was. And I don't know. I don't really know where I'm going with this big ramble.
Well, I can tell you that I think you're off on a wrong track in this sense. The Greeks, I don't care if you gave the Greeks the Mount Palomar telescope that we have today, which I don't think they had, it still can't see galactic center and know where it is. It's just too far. It's just too far out there, I think.
But that's sort of
But also, the position that the star map, the planisphere, and that the globe on Atlas's shoulders, the positioning of that was a view from outside the bubble, taken of like 10 times from the sun to Pluto out, looking in. The Greeks didn't know that. They couldn't possibly have gotten that. They couldn't have conceived that. And if you want to give the Greeks credit for having telescopes, then tell me how the Sumerians.
This is something you can look up. I mean, the fact is once you realize how the stars move in the skies, it would be easy to see where the poles are, how it rotates or axis, how some areas move slower and some are faster. It would not be a difficult thing to work out. And it may seem as though the view is taken from the outside, but outside, it's an awfully lot like the inside when you're looking out.
The Sumerians, 2,000 years before the Greeks, without telescopes as far as anybody knows, somehow knew that Uranus and Neptune and Pluto were there, made it very clear in their cylinder seals and in their writings. These things are out there, and here's what they look like. Now, they didn't get that from eye contact, from doing it with their naked eyes, and they didn't do it with telescopes. They said very clearly in their writings, we were told all this by the gods who live among us and who created us and all that. So I'm willing to believe that if the Sumerians were living with gods who created them and who told them all of their astronomical knowledge, and they were the first people to have any kind of an astronomy, and the Greeks, I think, are very, very clear that it passed down to them, as well as the Romans, for that matter, from the Sumerians and from the Babylonians, who got it from the Sumerians, it started at a certain point, and it started by people telling them what it looked like out there and writing it down and giving them the information, and then it just passed down. I never heard of the telescopes that you're talking about with the Greeks. I'm not challenging you on it because I don't know. I've never heard of that. I just have your word for it at this moment that it's true. I've never heard of it. But if it is true, there's so much more information that they simply couldn't have acquired even with telescopes, because the views that they were talking about were just too far out in space looking in. Another point, the Sumerians didn't clock the solar system from the sun out. They clocked it from outside in. The Earth to them was the seventh planet from the outside working in, instead of the third planet from the sun out. Now, why would the Sumerians at 4,000 years ago take that viewpoint, unless it was the viewpoint of somebody giving it to them, saying, this is the way it is as you move from outside Pluto in?
There's no question something happened on this planet a long time ago, Lloyd. Too many civilizations talk about gods from above.
Exactly.
And as you know, I don't believe in coincidences. Something happened.
That much smoke, got to be a good fire.
You got that right. Let's go west of the Rockies. You're on the air with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Oh, yeah, hi, George. Hi, Lloyd. This is Wayne up here on the Snake River Plains of southern Idaho.
Uh-huh. Hey, Wayne,
I have a question for Lloyd. I would really like to know his take on, you know, the Discovery Channel continually depicts Neanderthals wearing clothes and burying their dead with flowers and having fire and creating fairly complex hunting tools and such, I don't see how that can be right if they were hominoids.
That's right. On my website there are a series of slideshows that you can see, and one of them addresses this question exactly about how the pre-humans are always depicted as looking like, you know, pardon my French, but ugly human beings. You have these extremely ugly faces, but you have human bodies stuck underneath them. This is all part of brainwashing to make everyone believe that they were just a few centimeters away from being human. when in fact their bodies, nothing about their bones indicates that their bodies looked anything like ours. Their bones are much thicker, much more robust than ours. This is all the prehumans up through Neanderthals. Their arms were longer, especially from the shoulder to the elbow, exactly like the hominoids. So that it's 100% true that we are given a very, very distorted version of what the Neanderthals were really like, because even though they've lost them as our, you know, as an ancestor genetically, they were wedded to it for so long that they still have a lot of information that they produced to make a linkage, to make a flow between Neanderthal and Cro-Magnon, that bad information is still out there. Nobody corrects it. They just leave it.
It's a gap nobody ever filled, right?
Excuse me? I'm sorry?
It's a gap nobody ever filled, you know.
There's never been a missing link to fill that gap. But that is just simply bad information that has been overturned by genetic studies, but they're so wedded to the idea that they continue to portray Neanderthals as not far from humans. And there's a whole school of anthropologists who argue about the primitiveness versus the sophistication of the Neanderthals. It's not just me, but I'm just very confident that the Neanderthals in fact were hominoids, and if they didn't bury their dead, those that got buried were buried by the Cro-Magnons. They didn't do anything like that. They're not that sophisticated. They're hominoids, period.
Couple more calls to go. First time caller line, welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Oh, hi, this is Bruce from Baton Rouge.
Hey, Bruce.
Yeah. And hi, George and Lloyd. I had a question for you concerning the electric universe.
Okay.
James McCanney, some 20 years ago, wrote of this theory of the magnetic electrical universe and bodies that entered the universal solar system would glow like, comets and things like this, and that interfered with the our solar system, and caused Earth changes like pole shifts and great floods, and he called it action at a distance, and he's right along the same lines that you guys are talking about concerning the electric universe and the interaction of other planets and things like this. I just wanted to see what you thought about this. And by the way, this is a great program. It's too bad the rest of the world can't stay up at night and go to sleep during the daytime and be as smart as we are. That's good. It's a great program.
Thank you very much. As far as James McCanney's work, he seems to be very, protective about his take on things, and I can appreciate that. But really, the truth of it is, the electric universe theory goes well beyond him and well prior to him. Again, starting with, as George said, Tesla and Birkeland and the Birkeland currents and Hannes Alphen and Emanuel Velikovsky, all these guys were talking about it, long before him. He has his own take and his own spin on it, and certainly he's welcome to that. It's a big body of information, and there's a lot of different angles and slants you can take on it, but it does have some fundamentals that were discovered starting back in the 20s and 30s and then going on through into the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And now it's a recognized and accepted aspect of cosmology.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, I'm Tim from Edwardsville. And one thing that's always really made my skin crawl, it seems to me that every time an archaeologist confronts a structure that they don't understand, it's almost like a default explanation that it must absolutely have something to do with religion or ritual. And I've often thought that 1,000 years from now, after our civilization is history, they might think that perhaps the St. Louis Arch, we worshipped parabolas, or Mount Rushmore is gods, and the
Statue of Liberty is a
great goddess.
Huh? Or we did sacrifices on top of the arch.
Or the Statue of Liberty or whatever. Do you agree with that, or?
I'll tell you what. I don't even think it's going to take 1,000 years. If we look back 300 years, back then they thought the Earth was flat and that it was the center of the universe. And we look at them and we think, how colossally stupid, how egocentric could you be? Because the evidence was really there for anybody that would look. But the church kept the lid on it and wouldn't let the information get out to the people who, you know, to the ordinary people. So only a select few really knew the truth about it. So the mass of people thought the Earth was flat. It was the center of the universe. In 300 years from now, maybe only 200 years from now, people are going to look, because of the speed with which we acquire knowledge nowadays, if we make it to 200 years from now, people are going to look back on us and think, how could they have been so colossally stupid about biological reality? Back then, the problem was physical reality. We think we are the biological center of the universe, the same way they thought they were the physical center of the universe. And we're just as wrong and badly ignorant of reality today as they were then. And it won't be close to a thousand years before that's going to be as evident to those people as it is to us that our ancestors were badly, badly wrong. And that's one of the reasons I call my book Everything You Know Is Wrong. I think really basically fundamentally most of what we think is right today and true today is wrong.
Why is it that they don't seem to want to ascribe any practical value to some of the wonderful structures that existed in prehistoric times, but that they were simply religious ceremonial places, you know?
They just don't want to deal with it. It's just too hard. It's just too hard to deal with a reality that is so far over and above their heads, their ability to recreate, to understand. You know, if that was your job, to know everything about a certain field, and there's this big, ugly lump in it that you can't understand and nobody you know can understand, what would you do? You'd just turn away and go, you know, dig up clamshells or something. You'd do something different. You wouldn't want to deal with this thing, and that's what they do. They just try to make up, they try to explain things away rather than actually explain things, because it's just so much simpler and emotionally comforting to just explain it away with ridiculous, you know, answers and trust me because I'm the expert kind of thing, and leave me alone and let me go about collecting my paycheck and doing my real work.
Lloyd, very quickly, what are you doing in the conferences and travels?
Nothing, George, right now. I'm finishing a book about the Star Child that I've been working on for most of this year. I expect to have it done by the end of this year. And when the book is finished, I hope to spend next year doing a documentary about the Star Child. And hopefully the documentary and the book will come out together at the same time at the end of the year. That's my plan for right now.
Well, it's been a passion. It's been your life for a number of years.
Yeah, about 7 years next year, yeah.
Well, let's hope one day you get the answers you're looking for. Thanks again. Appreciate you being on the show.
Thank you for having me. I've loved it.
For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasori and Punnett, and Mr. Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.